I'm Susie Larson. Thanks for listening to this podcast from Susie Larson Live.
It's only just a matter of.
Susie Larson Live. So honored to get to spend this time with you. In fact, I look forward to bringing you conversations every single day that hopefully inspire you in your faith walk, that deepen your understanding of God's Word, and that heightens your awareness of His very real presence in your life. So honored to have you listening today. Well, if you listen often enough, you know that every month I have Dr. Troy on the show to talk about health and the healing process, to answer your questions. Well, today I want to introduce you to another friend of mine. She's been on the show before, but it's been quite a while since she's been on. She's fast becoming a world-renowned expert in the area of mold toxicity, mast cell activation, and other autoimmune issues. Dr. Jill Carnahan's both an MD and a functional med doctor. She's an expert in health and the healing process. She's a woman of God, and she's my friend. We're going to open the show by talking about some things that some of you know about because I've heard from you as my listeners. SIRS, chronic inflammatory response syndrome, mold toxicity, mast cell, and a few others. But we welcome your questions, much like when Dr. Troy's on the show. She loves questions. So you just send them in. You got questions about supplements, about COVID, whatever. Absolutely amazing. I want to tell you, too, you got to sign up for her newsletter. You can go to drjillhealth.com. You will get emails with recipes, with just updates on latest information on health issues, autoimmune issues. It's fascinating. All right, you can text your questions in right now at 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484, or email me, Susie@myfaithradio.com. And we will get to Dr. Jill in just a moment. I got a quick announcement for you. I'm not sure if you've heard of the He Reads Truth Bible, but it's amazing. It's full of resources. It helps men to engage with God's Word in a really tailor-made way. Well, we're giving away one copy of the He Reads Truth Bible per week this month. You can register to win at myfaithradio.com. All right, let me tell you about my friend. We'll get her on the show. Dr. Jill Carnahan's board certified in both family medicine and integrative holistic medicine. She owns her own practice, Flatiron Functional Medicine, in Louisville, Colorado, and we are honored and blessed to have her with us today. Dr. Jill, so good to talk with you.
Susie, it is just my delight to be here with you today.
I am so looking forward to our conversation. And we love to start every day talking scripture. And you're such an overachiever. You got me your verse ahead of time. And I love this verse. I don't even know if I've read the whole Bible through multiple times, but it jumped off the page when you shared it. Jeremiah 33:6. Behold, I will bring it to health and healing, and I will heal them and reveal to them an abundance of prosperity and security. Talk about why you chose that passage.
Oh, Susie, I just get goosebumps even hearing you say it again. You know, God is so good, and there's been so many times in my life through my own journey with cancer and Crohn's, and this one was more recently with my mold and SIRS journey, as you mentioned. I remember walking along. I always walk and pray, and I tend to have a lot of ability to connect with God as I'm moving. So it's usually on my walks, I have prayer walks. And I remember just like feeling so sick and overwhelmed and like, will I ever, I mean, I had rashes around my eyes that looked like I, you know, had a disease like leprosy. And I was so weak and tired in the midst of it. And my brain was not working at 100%. I would miss words and things. And I remember just thinking, God, am I ever going to be well? And I pulled open a friend's newsletter who's a beautiful Christian, and this was at the top. And I just, you know how those things just jump out, and his word is so alive. And I remember just knowing this is God's promise to me. Like, I will bring health and healing out of your suffering, and I'm going to show you. And for me, God has shown me over and over again my journey, the journey he's called me to, is called me to go through very difficult health trials, because there's only there's an ability to learn and understand within it that I would never have from a textbook. So now I just kind of know that this is my journey. I've had many, many things along the way, but he promised I'm going to bring not only health and healing to it, but even more than that, this abundance of prosperity and security. And it just, to me, it's, he is so good and so faithful because he uses everything I've been through for his glory and then for me to be able to help other people.
You know, that's what makes you such an exceptional doctor. You know, you're brilliant. You have a brilliant doctor mind, but your heart of compassion and empathy because you've walked the road. And I know it's like this for me too. Even though it's been a while, I hear you choke up when you and I talk. It's not far from you. I don't know if it ever is when you walk those dark roads of suffering. So for those who don't know your story, bring us back a little bit, because you're like me in that we're very health-minded, we're focused, we're disciplined, and we both got knocked over. So talk about your journey.
Yeah, you know, and I want to start, I just have this thought. I don't know if I've ever told this as part of my story, but, you know, in the high school senior yearbook, you vote your class to be like, you know, the most successful or this or that. And I remember one of the things that my class voted me was like most health conscious in my senior yearbook. So it is ironic, like then at 25, I was a third year medical student in prime of my life, you know, pursuing my dream of becoming a doctor. I had no idea that anything was brewing or that I would be soon to find out that I was facing a life-threatening illness. But in my third year surgical rotation, I found a lump in my left breast. And I literally, Susie, was so busy. Rotations are so brutal. You work 36-hour shifts, and it's a really difficult time. My first thought was, I don't have time for this. But that the insistence of my husband, I went and had it checked out, and it found out pretty quickly that it was serious. And I remember my surgeon calling me just a week after surgery and saying, Jill, I don't know how to tell you this, but you have invasive, very, very aggressive breast cancer. And that was at Loyola University in Chicago at the time where I did medical school. Literally, Susie, I was the youngest person they had diagnosed ever in Loyola. Now, since then, sadly, this has been more common in young women. I've heard of a lot of people in their 20s and 30s, of course. But at the time, I was the first person that young to be diagnosed. And what people don't know, we all know someone, mother, sister, aunt, who's had breast cancer. It's super common. But what many people don't know is when it hits women in their 20s or 30s, very young, below or before menopause, the rate of people dying from this is extremely high because it's so aggressive in young people. So it's almost like a different disease than, you know, a 75-year-old woman might die of other causes. So I remember hearing the surgeon tell me my diagnosis and the almost the fear I felt in her voice of she was afraid to tell me, and she knew that I could die from this very easily. And I remember I always say I didn't know at that moment. Now I'm vibrant and have overcome so many things. But in the moment of getting the diagnosis, I had no idea if I had 6 weeks or 6 months or even years. So I was in the midst of that. And I remember just, you know, seeking God. And he brought me a verse from John. The sickness is not in. This is my first life verse before the second one we shared. And I'm driving the car, just overwhelmed with the diagnosis, not knowing what's going to happen. And trying to make decisions about care. Do I do chemotherapy? Do I do radiation? Do I do surgery? What do I do for this cancer? And he said, this sickness is not unto death, but for the glory of God, that the Son of God may be glorified thereby. And again, I was cut to the heart and just knew like that moment. I didn't know anything about it, but God gave me that promise that not only would I live and survive, but it would be for his glory. And Susie, there's been nothing more true in my life. That story, that experience set me up for the greatest success, and success not in the worldly view, but like whether it was the knowledge base or the understanding that I have for patients, all of the good things that I have in my practice now were based on me having to go through that really difficult trial with cancer. And I would not be close to the physician that I am without having gone through that. So his promises are so true. It was a beautiful thing.
Well, Dr. Jill, there's so much here, too. I mean, you ended up with Crohn's because of the chemo, if I remember right. And yes. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I also seem to remember you had a conversation with the doctor. So you're a third-year medical student, but you are health-minded. And didn't you ask one of the doctors who was treating you, does diet have anything to do with this? And they said no. And so you went on a different path. I mean, talk, if you would, a bit about that.
Yes. Oh, you're exactly right. So 6 months after I got through chemotherapy, 3 drug chemo, 6 months, lost all my hair, extremely weak. And as you can imagine from chemotherapy, my body was ravaged. And then I went through radiation and I had through multiple surgeries through that time. And I just get out of that, started back on my rotations. And I started to have abdominal pain, weight loss, diarrhea, and fevers, cyclical fevers. Again, I kind of thought, oh, it's just from the chemo. I'll be okay. I'm just in a weakened state. Well, 6 months after I finished all my treatment for cancer, I was in the doctor's office after a biopsy of my colon, and I was told that I had Crohn's disease. Now, Crohn's is an autoimmune disease, another passion I have for helping people with autoimmunity. And Crohn's is where your body gets confused and starts to attack the lining of your gut. So you have these lesions and ulcerations all down your entire gut, and it can cause pain and weight loss, and it can also be very life-threatening. Now, because I do functional medicine and now I understand what happened, it was kind of the perfect storm because I had a genetic predisposition towards this overreaction on the gut lining for Crohn's. And then when you take chemotherapy, chemotherapy induces leaky gut and creates more permeability and more insult to the immune system. So basically I was undiagnosed celiac. So I had this gluten in my diet that was causing problems and inflammation. I had chemotherapy that attacked the lining and caused permeability of the gut. I always say it's like tiles in your bathroom wall and the grout dissolves. So you have permeability that happens all of a sudden between the cells that line your gut. And then the third thing, again, I had the genetics. So it was this perfect storm, got Crohn's disease. And I remember thinking, I was only a third-year medical student. I didn't know a ton about nutrition. I wanted to live healthy, but I sat in my GI, my gastroenterologist's office, and he said, Jill, you're going to need lifelong drugs, probably immune modulating drugs. You're probably going to have multiple surgeries, and this is incurable. And then I said, my next question was, well, you know, can I do something with diet? And he looked me straight in the eye and said, Jill, diet has nothing to do with this. And I knew, Susie, again, I didn't have the knowledge I do today, but my intuition, my spirit of God inside me said, that's not true. And I'm stubborn. I got a German-Swiss heritage, and I thought, I'm going to prove him wrong. I walked out. I never saw him again, and I went and did the research, found some dietary changes. At that time, for me, it was specific carbohydrate diet. Within 2 weeks, I was not cured, but my symptoms of diarrhea, pain, and fevers were gone.
And in due time, you had no sign of Crohn's in your body, which is unheard of.
It is. And I people get mad when they say I'm cured because they're like, well, my doctor said it's not curable. But there is no doubt in my mind I'm cured. I have no evidence of Crohn's. It's been almost 18 years. And I do consider myself cured of the incurable by God's grace.
Wow, amazing. We're going to pause here. When we come back, there's one more aspect to her story. Well, there's a lot more, but this another twist and turn around the health journey, as you can see why she's such a compassionate doctor. And we welcome your questions. I've got a list of so many questions I've received from listeners around her health journey, so I'll read those as well. But go ahead and text if you want, 877-933-2484, or email Susie@myfaithradio.com. We'll be back in a minute. Much for tuning in to Susie Larson Live. Glad to have you listening today. Talking to my friend Dr. Jill Carnahan. If you listen often enough, you know I have Dr. Troy on. He's a functional med doc, and we answer your questions around health and healing. Dr. Jill is both an MD and a functional med doc, and she's become a world-renowned expert in the areas of mold toxicity, mast cell activation, and other things. So when other doctors are talking and treating people with mold toxicity, they will often quote, well, Dr. Jill Carnahan says, so I'm telling you, she's brilliant and she's a woman of God, and we're so honored to have her with us today. And we're in the middle of your story. You talked about young, third-year medical student, get aggressive form of breast cancer that many young women die from, and the Lord really helped you recover, and you fought for it too with diet and different things. Then you developed Crohn's from the chemo, and you went after that, and by the grace of God, you were healthy. You recovered, I should say. We're going to get into the next twist of your story, but I do have a question from Michelle, and it may tie into this part of your story, Doc. She says, I have a question for Dr. Jill. What do you know about baseline for many diseases being connected to mold toxicity, systemic infection, heavy metal toxicity, and more? And if you treat these, that the disease will go away? Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Great question, Michelle, because you know what I always say, I'm sitting in for our patients, and a lot of people who seek me already know what functional medicine is, but for those, say I'm in an elevator, people are like, what is functional medicine? It's really simple in my mind. At the core, what I'm looking at is root cause, first of all. So what are the contributing metabolic and environmental factors that led to you developing a disease? So right now in our conventional system, we have this thing where you basically get a diagnosis and a label, and that tells you what you have, but not too many conventional doctors go to the why. Why did that happen? What changes in your system, what exposures, what infections caused that to manifest in your body? Because if we look backwards on that trajectory and get to that root cause, and you change the root cause, sometimes, just like Michelle said, you can reverse disease. So back to the simple explanation, functional medicine at the root, what I look at every single day is toxic load and infectious burden. So what that means is it's almost like a seesaw of how these things come into play. And really at the root of most complex chronic disease is toxic load. That could include chemicals, pesticides, food additives, heavy metals, mold in your environment, mycotoxins, other things from water-damaged building, and we all get exposed. There's literally hundreds of thousands of new chemicals being put on the market every year, and most of these don't have very good testing, and many of them are persistent, meaning their half-life might be 50 years in the environment. So our accumulation of toxins and exposures, even if we eat clean, and I always say, clean air, clean water, clean food. It comes down to really, really simple interventions that aren't so simple sometimes, but that really do make a difference. So that's toxic load. And then, Michelle, you ask about infections. And what I'm seeing is because of that toxic load on the human body, our body is made by God to recover and to detoxify and to do all the things it needs to do. But when it gets overwhelmed, when our bucket gets full of toxins, that load of water, if you imagine a bucket full of water and that water flowing over the top, that's when we present as disease, because our capacity to hold any more water is completely overwhelmed. So my job as a functional medicine doctor is to try to take the load in the bucket down to give back the patient margin to do what the body was created to do anyway, which is detoxify. But what happens is because of that toxic load and that burden, it weakens the immune system. So old things like chickenpox virus can cause shingles to pop up, or old Epstein-Barr or cytomegaly virus or old childhood viral infections can pop up and cause chronic fatigue or fibromyalgia or unusual types of presentations. And the other things that are becoming epidemic in our world because of all the changes in human populations and things are tick-borne infections are really, really common. That could include the classical Lyme disease, but it also includes things like Bartonella, Babesia, Ehrlichia, and there's many, many, many others. And these can be carried by ticks, but certain ones can be carried by mosquitoes or by spiders or by all kinds of things. And as we travel and get into the woods, or a lot of people don't ever even know they got bit, but they have these old infections that can pop up when the immune system is weak and cause a lot of issues.
Wow, absolutely amazing. Susan asked this question. First of all, she said, thanks so much, Dr. Jill, for taking questions. Can chlorine from swimming cause digestive issues?
Oh, great question. I moved to Colorado when I was a swimmer in college and then here, and I actually had to stop swimming because the chlorine affected my gut and my skin and health so much. Mm. So chlorine is basically diluted bleach, and bleach is just like if it's right now in this pandemic, we're using all these antimicrobials, and what happens is our immune system gets trained by its interaction with microbes, especially from 0 to 2 years old. So if you have babies or children and you don't let them get a little bit dirty once in a while, or grab a carrot, wipe it off from the garden and eat it fresh, some of these things are actually more helpful to their immune system than harmful. And as we sterilize our environment and use hand sanitizer in every single room, and we actually decrease our ability of our immune system to detect what's good, what's friendly, and what's dangerous, and to be able to help and protect ourselves. So some of that exposure is actually a little bit important.
Oh, interesting. All right. Dear Victoria says, thanks, Susie, for always having such wonderful people on the show. She says, Dr. Jill, I'm in my early 30s working to be as healthy as possible. I'm working to get gluten out of my diet. I've had a celiac test. It showed that I don't have celiacs. Wondering any other test I could ask my PCP about. Also wondering about the liquid multivitamins. And is there a test to see if I'm actually absorbing the nutrients at the level that I should? What do you say?
Oh, good question. So a classical celiac disease test looks at two things. It's TTG, IgA, and IgG. Those are complex terms, but all that means is those markers are signals to the body that the villi that line your small bowel are like, it's like shag carpet. So this thick shag carpet, it increases absorptive surface. And those villi are there to absorb nutrients, which relates to your second question of a liquid multivitamin. I'll get to that in just a second. But when those villi start to be damaged by a parasitic infection, by gluten in the case of celiac, or by other sorts of processes like small bowel bacterial overgrowth, all of these things start to damage your shag carpet. And so instead of having a lot of surface like shag carpet, you have like hardwood floors. You have no surface left or very minimal surface left when those villi are damaged. So that first test I mentioned is a true celiac where those villi are damaged and you've got either Berber or hardwood and you have no absorptive surface left. When that happens, that's true celiac. But what you're asking about is, you know, my doctor tested for celiac, says I don't have it, which is actually pretty common. But do I have gluten intolerance? So there's other tests like gluten antibodies. You can get gluten IgG and IgA or deaminated gluten IgG or IgA tests. And these are more accurate for non-celiac gluten intolerance, which can still cause pretty severe things like trigger autoimmunity, inflammatory conditions that can cause joint pain, brain fog, insomnia. Did you know that at least 50% of gluten-related symptoms are not in the gut? So the other category that's really common is mood disorders and energy like brain fog, insomnia, depression, anxiety. Those are just as common as presenting factors for gluten intolerance as are the diarrhea, the gut pain, and the malabsorption. So that's one way you can differentiate that. If you don't have time to test or don't have a doctor who's willing to test, there's another way to do it. Any of you could do this. You can take gluten out of your diet for 4 to 6 weeks. And you can see, number one, how do I feel with no gluten exposure? And then after that elimination trial, you add it back in and you say, okay, now that I'm adding it in, do I have my joint pain come back? Do I have swelling come back? And many people, without even a test, can tell that they're sensitive after they eliminate it for a period of time. The last thing is that multivitamin liquids tend to be a little bit better absorbed, but if you have damage to the gut, like I mentioned, that shag carpet gets eroded, the villi become atrophied, then you will have fat-soluble vitamin deficiencies and issues with absorbing vitamins D and K and A and E, which are all fat-soluble. So sometimes the way I can tell someone has malabsorption or damage is by seeing the levels of those vitamins be very low when I check.
Well, that's fascinating. So my brother has celiacs. I tested negative, but that was after years of going without gluten. So they said, you're probably not even getting a clear test. But I have a bite of gluten and I'll feel sick. So I don't even go near it. My husband, just because he wanted to do a fast, gave up gluten for about 6-8 weeks, lost 30 pounds. He didn't think it bugged him at all. Nothing seems to bug him. He lost 30 pounds and got instant brain clarity. And as soon as he reintroduced it again, he felt just crummy. I don't think people realize the impact it can have on so many. Are there some that it just doesn't bug them and it's okay? Because I'd heard that bread now has like 6 times the gluten that our bodies are not really wired to process.
Yes. So, Susie, what you're describing is so common. First of all, gluten's been altered, like you said, and so the hybrids, I mean, my dad's a farmer, so I know a lot about crops and farming and genetically modified. The kind of gluten that's typically grown in the U.S. and is in most of our food products is actually bred to contain a larger amount of gluten. So we're getting a larger exposure, and then much of that gluten, if it's non-organic or if it's genetically modified, is being sprayed with glyphosate or Roundup, and those chemicals can actually affect the proteins and the what we call antigenicity. All that means is how quickly your body reacts. So what's happening is what we have in the U.S. as a wheat crop is way more reactive to people than it used to be. And then the second thing that can happen is you mentioned that we know from studies that pretty much any person, even if they have no issues with gluten or celiac, within 3 to 4 hours after eating gluten, it will increase intestinal permeability or create more leaky gut in every one of us. So even if you don't have a gluten issue, So it's, again, some people can handle that, right? If you're healthy overall, no issues, people can handle that with no symptoms. But it does increase permeability universally.
Wow. We're going to pause here. So I'm going to ask you on the other side, is it your advice that maybe everybody should get off gluten? We've got questions about Hashimoto's and a few other things. We welcome your questions. Text 877-933-2484. And we'll be back in a minute. Thanks so much for tuning in to Susie Larson Live. Glad to have you listening today, talking to my dear friend, Dr. Jill Carnahan. She's an MD. She's a functional med doctor. She is a world-renowned expert on mold toxicity, mast cell activation, other autoimmune diseases. Lots of people look to her, and she's just an incredible leader and a humble woman of God. Taking your questions, and we also have a part of her story that I want to get back to if we can, but I want to answer these questions. This dear listener says, hey there, lovely ladies. First of all, love that. She says, thanks for this conversation. She says, I was diagnosed with Hashimoto's as a child, and by the time I was a teenager, ended up with half my thyroid removed. Is there anything I can do to increase thyroid production in the half that I have left? And will I always need medication to balance thyroid hormones that I'm lacking?
Oh, great question. I'm sorry you had to go through that. You know, when you have a partial thyroidectomy, you, of course, still have a half of your thyroid that's functioning. The main thing I would say there is there's no magical way to make sure that that's producing more thyroid, but there is nutrients. There are nutrients that the thyroid requires. Some of those include selenium. And when we talk about T3 or T4, all that is tyrosine molecule attached to iodine. And that 4 is 4 iodines. The 3 is 3 iodines. So tyrosine and iodine are kind of your building blocks for thyroid. Zinc is very critical. Iron is critical. But if someone is not low on iron, I generally do not recommend supplementing with iron because it can be inflammatory. But those are just some of the very, very basic nutrients that your body needs to build thyroid. Obviously, eating a healthy diet. If you eat too much raw cruciferous, they're called goitrogens. These would be like cabbage, broccoli, cauliflower, kale. So say you had a 2-pound kale green smoothie every single day that was raw kale, you could actually inhibit some of the thyroid production through that. Now, I'm a huge fan of leafy greens, so don't let that make you afraid to eat them. It's just the quantities and the raw, when they're raw, that you can overdo it if you're doing pounds and pounds of juicing or something like that. So I'd be cautious with the goitrogens if you have had thyroid issues. And Susie, it's interesting. I mentioned my breast cancer. My sister, so I had 25-year-old, I had breast cancer. My sister at 28 had thyroid cancer, and these are both endocrine organs. And so it's interesting, I can relate to this patient's question because my sister's in that position with a partial thyroidectomy. And you may wonder, what in the world? Two girls, same family, in their 20s with cancer. There's no doubt in my mind that growing up on a farm with some of the toxic chemicals that affect the endocrine system were contributing factors to both my sister and I getting those two cancers.
Oh, wow. Interesting. This one's from Megan. Dr. Jill, my current functional doctors aren't treating the Lyme and co-infections I have. This is at least my 6th year of having Lyme. And having been focusing loosely on the mold issue I've had, that has also led to SIRS. I've been calling it SIRS. You said SIRS. I want to make sure I say that right. It stands for Chronic Inflammatory Response Syndrome. I also have been dealing with mast cell activation syndrome. I've finally been able to go on a VIP spray. I'm still having a lot of issues with digestion and air and hunger, which my sister's new physician thinks it's untreated Babesia. Is it all right to continue being on VIP spray as I try to treat Babesia and Lyme and again, mast cell? Bless her heart. I want to just hug her.
Oh, yeah, my heart goes out to you. And you know what? That was my first thought when you said that. What was her name, Susie?
Her name is Megan.
Megan. Okay, Megan, thank you for asking that question. Typically, Babesia will present with air hunger, night sweats. It can present with disequilibrium, feeling like off balance. It can present with anxiety or insomnia. And of course, there are tests that can be done. My favorite lab, and I have no affiliation, is Igenix. It tends to be the best. It's out of California. It's a little expensive, but they really do a good job of diagnosing. So your first question is, you have mast cell, you have mold, you have Lyme and co-infections, and I do, based on your symptoms, think maybe Babesia is present. Babesia is a blood-borne parasite like malaria. So order of operations is important here because what happens is often people get bit by a tick or some sort of a infection, like Bartonella could be by cat scratches. So some sort of vector that causes this infection. You're going along in life and doing pretty well without a lot of symptoms. And then you get into a moldy house or a moldy building. Mold is a known thing that causes massive immune compromise. And because of that, then all of a sudden these old viruses, old tick-borne infections will start to pop up and cause problems. So that is the order of usually how I see things happen. And if you would start, say you're in a moldy building and you would start by treating the Lyme, you're probably not going to do very well. So you really need to get the mast cell stuff under control first and then start to treat the mold and detox the system. And if you think about the bucket analogy, if that bucket's all the way full and you have no detox capacity, when you start to treat and kill tick-borne infections, you actually create a more toxic situation as you're having this die-off of infections and toxic load. So if you don't have any margin and you're really toxic with mold, people tend to not do very well. So I always like to get the mast cell under control, treat the mold toxicity, make sure that you're not still in a moldy environment because then all bets are off if you're going to get well. And I certainly wouldn't be aggressively treating the tick-borne infections if you're still in a moldy environment. And then if you still have symptoms, then that is the time to treat the tick-borne infection.
Wow, thank you for that. Let's go to that part of your story. So how much time passed? I think quite a bit, didn't it, between cancer, Crohn's, chemo, getting through all of that, and then being in your practice and suddenly starting to feel symptoms of another kind?
Yeah, so let's see, 2002, I got Crohn's and kind of got through that and just started to heal. 2006, I moved to Boulder and started my practice. And I remember that being a really good time. I was overall pretty healthy. I was running. I was outdoors and active and everything. And then over several years, that was actually 2010. And by 2013, there was a massive flood in Boulder. And unbeknownst to me, my office flooded in the basement, and Stachybotrys, one of the really nasty black molds, was growing. And I also had an unfinished crawl space right underneath my office. So we had mold in the basement. My office was on the second story, and right under my office was a moldy crawl space. And I started in my office the next year in 2014 and then into 15. I would get a shorter breath walking up the stairs to my office. I started having unusual rashes around my eyes and hives and breathing symptoms, difficult with shortness of breath. I started having more brain fog where I'd have trouble remembering certain words or recalling, you know, short-term memory, little things that I'd be like, oh, where did I put this or that? Or what did I, write in that letter? I have more trouble with focus and concentration. And I started to think, oh, gosh, something's not right here. And I love telling this part of the story because so many people are in this, and it's pretty much a universal truth. Mold is overwhelming, and it affects some place that is usually secure. So it's your office, your home, you know, it affects something that should be secure for you. And so a lot of people go into denial for a while because it's overwhelming. And I was no different. I think it was about 5 to 6 months before I actually tried to find the problem, because I thought, oh, gosh, if this is mold and it's affecting my home or my office, I'm going to have to make some major changes. But finally, it got bad enough that I did testing, and I tested my urine for mycotoxins, and I tested some other labs for the sears. And then I also tested a bulk sample of the stuff in the basement. And all of that data came back that there was Stachybotrys in the basement, there was mold, mycotoxins in my urine, and then many of the inflammatory markers in my blood were abnormal. So I knew then that there was an issue, and that's what started my passion about discovering how to treat mold-related illness.
And you needed to walk away from your building, all of your medical books. You basically had to leave all of it behind and start over, didn't you?
I did, Susie, and it's so funny because I remember, like, you know, I was tearful. This was 20. I love books. I always joke I was going to be a librarian before God called me to medicine because I love books. And I had 20 years of medical school books and things that were pretty precious. But I literally had to say, you know what, my health is more important. And that office was so bad. The furniture, the books, I walked out. I left everything except my patient records, and I didn't even think twice because my health was more important. But I know your listeners, I know people out there who've experienced this. This is tough stuff, and no one understands, because if it's a fire or a tornado, you have the compassion of people around you. When it's mold, people don't really get it. They think you're crazy.
Yeah, because stats are, and correct me if these have changed since I last learned, but 1 in 4 people have a genetic deficiency to be able to process mold. So others may be able to walk in a building, walk out. They may feel crummy if they have extended process or time there, but their body will process that. But others don't have that luxury. Say a word, if you would, about that, because you think of, really, there's mold everywhere, but there are 1/4 of the population can't process it like normal people can.
Yeah, so there's this thing called HLAs, and they're like our little sampling system. They have a lot to do with what I talked about earlier with our immune system in a 0 to 2-year-old, and the sampling that our immune system does and says, hey, this is good. This is just food like egg or corn, or, ooh, that's a parasite, that's a bacteria, that's a mold toxin. So our immune system is always, it's charged with determining what's good, what's bad, what's dangerous, what's safe. And this HLA system in people who have more mold sensitivity has a hard time tagging and detecting the toxins in mold as dangerous. So what happens is they accumulate in the body, and then they do a merry-go-round where they're causing massive collateral damage. A lot of the damage that comes from mold-related illness is not just from the toxins, but it's from the toxins activating your own immune system. And your immune system is trying to get rid of these things, but in the process, it creates a lot of inflammation and a lot of damage. So there are, like you said, Susie, it's about 1/4. I think now the percentage is higher, and I'm not even sure exactly what percentage, but at least 1/4 of people who are extremely, they cannot tag those toxins, and so therefore they have more damage in their bodies because of it. And they get, unless they, a doctor helps them or they find out how to go in and detoxify, they get a lot of inflammatory damage from the mold.
I remember reading a story about a young man. So he was too young for Alzheimer's. He was in his 40s, I want to say. And this was a while ago, so I'm going to just paraphrase as best I can, but he ended up with dementia. They thought he had early Alzheimer's. They put him in a home. And then the discovery around mold, where people were hearing about some of the similar symptoms, because it acts like so many of these neurological diseases. Somebody pulled him out, did the NeuroQuant MRI, found mold on his brain, inflammation in his body, treated him with all the binders and all the things that you write about. And friends, if you want information, there are just copious amounts of blog posts on Dr. Jill's website. They treated him. He'd actually lost his business because he thought he had Alzheimer's and he had lost so much cognitive function. They treated him. They reversed that diagnosis and said, oh, you didn't have that. You had mold. And he reopened a new business. It's back in full strength. And it just makes me wonder, Doc, how many people have maybe been misdiagnosed with things that that could be this, and it's treatable then, you know?
Susie, I think it's astronomical. And, you know, one of your questions earlier, I don't think we even got to that. And it was Michelle who asked about, you know, autoimmunity and some of these other things, and they're masquerading and the underlying thing is mold. You know, I've had mold and I recognize it. And I do my practice, I do a ton of mold treatment because of that. But I literally, every new patient I see, there's a very important caution that we're taught as doctors is, you know, we don't go in with any preconceived notion of what the patient has. We're kind of like a blank slate to listen and understand and then put the clues together. So I'm actually very careful when I see a new patient not to assume that mold has anything to do with it. But I'll tell you, I'm always shocked at how many patients of Hashimoto's thyroiditis and multiple sclerosis and, again, dementia or brain issues or mood disorders. Dale Bredesen, who's done a lot of the work around Alzheimer's, he has a statistic of 1 in 3 of early onset Alzheimer's is mold related. That's astronomical. Yeah.
Wow. Oh, my goodness. We're going to pause here. When we come back, Cara asks this question. She says she's a doctor. Question for the doc today. A couple weeks ago, their water was tested, found to have 21 ppm of arsenic. She said, I believe my husband and I have been drinking this for a year. We now have RO filters in place to remove it from our water. Concerned what this may have done to our health. What recommendations for detox? A number of questions have come in about detox. People are loving your bucket analogy. Your analogies makes it so easy to understand. I'm talking to Dr. Jill Carnahan. Her newsletter, if you want to sign up, it's at drjillhealth.com. I love this woman. She's a wealth of wisdom and knowledge, and we'll continue to take questions. You can text them in, 877-933-2484. We'll be back in a minute.
Jesus.
Thank you so much for tuning into Susie Larson Live, talking to my friend. She's an MD. She's a functional med doctor. She's a sister in the Lord, and she's got a brilliant mind, Dr. Jill Carnahan. We're taking your questions. You know why? You look at, follow Jesus around the Gospels. He cared so much about the human condition. He cared when people suffered. And I just love that God raises up godly, amazing, smart doctors like Dr. Jill to help us move on the healing process. Some get an instant miracle, and we pray for that, and we believe for that. But a lot of us, we have to take the road, the journey, and we take it one step at a time. Dr. Jill, this dear listener, Cara, says this, and I read it right before the break. She said, let's see here. Her water was tested and found to have 21 ppm of arsenic. She said, I believe my husband and I have been drinking this water for a year. We now have RO filters in place to remove it from the water. I'm concerned what it may have done to our health, what recommendations you may have for detox.
Yeah, so, you know, this is common. The other place I see arsenic is in if people eat a lot of rice or chicken. Rice a lot of times is a little contaminated with arsenic, and then and the chicken can be contaminated as well. So it is appropriate. Your doctor can check a serum whole blood level of basically you can do a heavy metal panel, which would be lead, mercury, arsenic, aluminum, and I believe cadmium is on that panel too. So these are things you could ask your doctor to check through your routine lab. That's a whole nother discussion to get into urine versus blood as far as what's best for testing heavy metals, but there's easy to screen for. So arsenic, what to do. The basic detox for heavy metals tends to work. Now there are specific things for lead and mercury, but if you're dealing with arsenic, these principles that I'm going to mention would apply to most detoxification. So I'm kind of killing two birds with one stone. Glutathione is the master antioxidant that our liver produces in order to help us get rid of mold toxins, heavy metals, other chemicals and pesticides and things. So you want your glutathione status to be good. The best way to do that is to either take a liposomal glutathione orally, or to use precursors, and I'll tell you what those are, to enhance your glutathione status. Things that are precursors would be things like N-acetylcysteine, it's also known as NAC. Lipoic acid is especially good and important for heavy metal toxicity. Vitamin C is a precursor, and vitamin C is also antihistamine. So if you have mast cell issues, that can be really good. And then milk thistle is a classic liver support, and typically I'll use all four of those in support for detox. And then whether you're dealing with mold or heavy metals, different binders can often help escort these things out of the body. And things that are based with silica or with zeolite, those tend to be a little stronger for heavy metals. For mold toxicity, I would probably choose things that are more based with clay or charcoal or even chlorella. Those tend to be good. And a lot of these things, you can combine different binders. And the way that works is a lot of the toxins are stored in the bile in the gallbladder, and these toxins have an affinity to pull out through your gut into your stool, so you eliminate them a little bit easier. It's almost like if you have a magnet and metal filings and you're kind of pulling them, escorting them out of your body. If you don't have a binder, they tend to reabsorb, and I always call it this is a long word, but it's the enterohepatic. It means it's the gut and liver recirculation. And so if you don't have the binders, they just go round and around and around, and they never really get pulled out of your body.
Boy, that's important to know. And you've got, you like for charcoal, you like Bulletproof, I think. Do you have others that you like?
Yeah, the upgraded Bulletproof is my favorite. It's a coconut charcoal. BioBotanicals makes something called GI Detox. That's a combination of clay and charcoal and zeolite and pretty gentle. Quicksilver makes something called the Ultra Binder. And we actually, Susie, just developed, because this is such a complex problem, it is on that website you mentioned, drjillhealth.com, but it's called the Miracle Mold Detox Box. And it has all of these things like in it, just because people were trying to figure out, what do we do? And I thought, there needs to be a solution. So it's kind of a all-in-one. It's a 30-day kit where people could take these things and actually help their bodies to detoxify.
Somebody also, I think it was Susan, who asked, how do I test my home? What's the best test for my home to see if there's mold?
Yeah, so I always want to give the inspectors credit, because you really ultimately are going to need an inspector, but sometimes you either don't have the money or you want to start and see if there's a problem. And so I do still recommend dust sampling, and one of them is called ERMI, E-R-M-I. There's multiple companies in Virobiotics and Mycometrics.com, and you can purchase these online, like a dust sample kit. Check the dust in your home for DNA from mold, and if that score is high, then you get an inspector in to say, you know, where's the problem? Because you might know there's cotomium, which is a very bad mold in my home, but you still need to say, is it behind this wall? Is it under the sink? Is it in the laundry room? And then when you're remediating, it's not enough just to know where it's at. You actually have to take out the materials that were affected by the mold under proper, you know, supervision and proper remediation.
All right, this one. Peggy says, I've been told I have mold in my sinuses. What do you recommend?
Oh, so this is a big deal, because if you have like positive mycotoxins in the urine, it usually means there's somewhere in your body, whether it's your gut or your sinuses, where you could have colonization of the mold, like aspergillus in your sinuses. So with your prescription from your doctor, you can get a prescription antifungal or antibacterial nasal spray, or you can do a nasal rinse. There are some over-the-counter products that a lot of patients use that are fairly effective. Grapefruit seed extract is one of them, and BioBotanicals make something called Biocidin. They are creating a nasal spray, but for now, a lot of patients will actually use the Biocidin drops in a nasal wash, like a nasal rinse.
You know, that site, survivingmold.com, there's a visual contrast test you can take online. It's an eye test where you cover up one eye and they show you three circles and you have to match the lines with the circles. Is that test still something that, I mean, I know it's not foolproof, it's just a 15-minute, $15 test, but it used to carry some weight, where if you failed that you may have mold in your system?
Yeah, Susie, I still use this. So I like things that are free and easy for patients if we want to know what direction to go. And that one, again, you can do it online for $15. And then in our office, we actually do it in person. And, of course, it's free. Because if you fail the visual contrast test, there is a likelihood that you have biotoxin exposure. And, again, no test is perfect. So there are, you know, a percentage of people, I think 8 to 10%, that can have a normal test and still have had mold exposure. But this test was developed in the armed services back in the 1940s for biotoxin exposures for soldiers, and it changes the visual acuity. So you can actually measure that and see if there's likelihood of a biotoxin exposure.
Interesting. Dear listener says, thanks so much, Susie and team at Faith Radio, for choosing this question. One more question for you. Could Americans' consumption of corn be the reason we have so much more toxicity related to disease? What do you say?
So corn and grains in general are very highly contaminated with mold. So that's one reason I believe, you know, that the popularity of a paleo or grain-free diets, a lot of patients do well in those. I think one of the reasons is because grains are one of the highest contaminated food sources of molds and mold toxins, corn in particular. Just corn in and of itself causing all this inflammatory disease, I would say it's a factor, but probably not the factor.
Wow. All right. How long did it take you when you realized you had to walk away from your building and start the process of healing? How long did it take you to work through your mold toxicity and all the symptoms? When did you start to take a turn and start to feel better?
Oh, I love this question because the reality is it takes a while. And I usually tell patients 6 months minimum and sometimes 18 months, sometimes even a little longer. It's going to be a year or two. And I remember my process, I definitely got sicker before I got better. And I was one of those people like, oh, just give it all to me. I'll take it all. And I took way too much, you know, too quickly and learned my lesson. But the first few months of detox with the binders, I got hives kind of almost from head to toe, minus my face, for several weeks. And that was just because I was aggravating the mast cells and causing inflammatory reactions because I was detoxing too fast. And of course, I should know better, but so it is not uncommon. If you start to feel a lot worse, though, I am not a fan of pushing detox so that you feel worse. If you're having what they call a Herxheimer reaction from treating an infection or a detox reaction from treating a process like mold, that means you're overwhelming your body's ability to eliminate the toxins. So there's mobilization of toxins, which is getting them released so that you can get rid of them, and then there's excretion. If you're mobilizing faster than you're excreting, you're in a no-win situation. The ratio is off, and you're going to feel more sick. So you have to sometimes slow down the detox process.
Well, I appreciate that so much. We've got just about 2 minutes left, and I promised we'd address mast cell. For those who don't know what it is, maybe give a quick look at that, but just say a word, if you would, about that. Sure. What you're seeing is helpful to mast cell patients.
Yeah, so MCAS is a short-term mast cell activation syndrome is another way. Mast cell activation disease is also another term. And mast cells are some blood cells that we have, all of us have in our bodies, and they're responsible for responding to danger as well. So when they have a threat like a toxin or an infection, some people get overly triggered, and then their mast cells will release hundreds of chemicals, including histamine, prostaglandins, and many other inflammatory cytokines. When that happens, it can affect every system in the body. So this can cause brain fog, leaky gut, definitely skin manifestations like hives, rashes, and unusual things on the skin. It can affect the brain. It can cause heart palpitations or racy heart. It can cause diarrhea or gut symptoms like heartburn and many, many, many symptoms in the body. And as I mentioned before, this is a real common thing for mold to create more irritation of the mast cells. And then what will happen is those will release their chemicals and patients will feel pretty poorly. So treating the mast cell activation, calming that down with different nutrients, is part of how we give them to feel better in the process.
Wow. What do you know about God now that you didn't know 5-10 years ago?
Oh, what a great question. You know, Susie, I think two things. Number one is I grew up in a very fundamental background where there was lots of rules and I was afraid of messing up. And I was kind of the recovering perfectionist. I was afraid of upsetting God. And granted, God has rules and he is holy and he is love. But I didn't really understand his loving nature. And as I've grown and understood how loving he is and how he accepts me as I am, even when I mess up, that to me is so beautiful because I want to turn that into the world and show the world that love and compassion without judgment in order that they may see the true nature of God in his holiness and his love. And the second thing is that faith moves mountains, and that's a trite saying, but I'll tell you, all the magic, the miracles, everything that I see in my life, I mean, I live a life of miracles. I am so blessed, and I really believe it comes down to, I believe, when God shows me a vision or tells me something, I take him at his word. And I'm like, okay, God, I don't know how this is going to happen, but I believe you.
You are a mountain climber and a mountain shaker, my friend. I pray you will come back. Friends, Dr. Jill Carnahan, her website, drjillhealth.com. Check it out. Hope you found some encouragement here today. We sure love you. We'll meet you back here next time. Thanks for listening to this conversation from Susie Larson Live. These podcasts are available because of listener support. You can become a supporter now at myfaithradio.com. And thanks for sharing this audio link to spread the good news of the gospel and to grow the impact of the show. Also, if you would, take a moment to subscribe to the podcast today at Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast player, and never miss a show.